Bro, I was, when it came down to your insight with Rain Rupert, I was impressed with how excited you got. Like, to me, it's really insightful. But before we get stuck too much talking or even justifying, you know, the game footage that you did watch.
Let's talk, like, about that for 10 seconds because I can't help myself. No.
Okay, go ahead.
All right. Like, guys, I've watched more than 25 minutes of Rayan's film, all right? I was talking about that specific block, that small little block of time that I had just taken, the 25 minutes. I've watched his game films. Last night, I watched two of his game films, one against this Sydney Swans. Listen, he doesn't always look on point. And I understand when people say he's not ready. But that's why I keep on saying he's 18 years old. And if you're going to get a project player, this is the project player to get in this draft.
All right, there you go. So let's talk about another guy. I took some time because obviously you were super prepared for yesterday and I wasn't. So I've been talking a lot about Nick Smith Jr. Mm. So I wanted to dig into this a little bit.
Man,
let's start.
Let's just start. If it wasn't for his injury, he'd be a top five player.
All right.
If he didn't only play 17 games this season and he didn't have an injury that he's coming back from, he'd be a top five. Easy. Top five.
What did he hurt? Do you know?
I thought it was his knee, but I don't, man. I don't. I'm so bad with injuries and trying to keep up with players and trying to make sure that I know.
Okay.
So.
Well, obviously, that's something to be, you know, taken into consideration. But, like, with overall with him, like, the thing that I kept remembering as I watched his game, and, like, he can do a lot of things really well. Like, he's a good passer and things like that. But, like, when you look back at the picks that Pressey's made in the past, you try to find, like, a little bit of, like, similarities between, like, those guys so that you can help kind of guess who he might pick in the future. And the amount of pressure that Nick Smith Jr. puts on the rim and the constant pressure he has. Now, he can definitely shoot from the outside and he's capable of doing that. But it reminds me a lot of, like, elite guards in today's NBA game. You have to be three-level scorers. And I heard somebody talking about D'Angelo Russell recently, and he just said that he's always been a two-level scorer. He's got a good mid-range game, and he can shoot the three. But he's not really a finisher at the basket. And that's one thing I think a lot of times people think you can evolve into finishing at the basket. But it's really the other way around. You have to be one of those players that attack the rim relentlessly, like Shea, and then you can bring the other parts of your game along. So that's one of the things I like about Nick Smith Jr. I think that his level of rim pressure, he's not like the highest flyer, although he's a really athletic finisher, but he can just absolutely constantly put pressure on the rim. And then when teams play off of him, he's going to make him pay by knocking down the shot. So is it going to be him? I hope so. I really do. I would love to see that happen. But that, to me, one of the things that the reason I'd like to see that is because when we get a pick from Presti, we usually try to look at it and say, like, what does that mean he thinks about the team in the future? And I feel like if he was picking Nick, it would mean that he felt like he needed another playmaker, another shooter, another just go out there and ball type player. And we could always use another one of those.
I love Nick Smith Jr. I've watched a lot of Arkansas's games this year. I've watched a lot of Arkansas's games for the last decade. But I love what they're doing with those players in Arkansas and how they're able to turn these players around. I really struggled when Nick Smith Jr. was in he was in the top seven players before the season started.
Right. Yeah, he was.
And I was really impressed with the way his style was, especially coming from high school. But the one thing I was concerned about was obviously, like, his output at a high college level. And then he got injured. And I'm like, well, is he going to be able to come back? And he not only came back, but in the 17 games he played, he was a very high productive player. And if you think about it, Sam Presti loves to play pick players that are very good at defense and a very productive stopper on defense. And I think Nick Smith Jr. is one of those guys that you have to take a step back and be like, he can hold his own on defense completely. He can be ready to play right now. He has that mentality of that Isaiah Joe and Jay Will of doing whatever it takes to get that team a win. And if that's a charge, hell yeah, he's going to step up and take that fucking charge. No doubt about it, man. That's what I love about Nick and why when push came to shove, I really struggled at who I was going to really make a deep dive into first. Because Nick was one of those guys that I look at, and because of his Arkansas affiliation, It has a piece of my heart. I've been very brutally honest. Since I've been 13, I've been an Arkansas fan for basketball. And because of that, like, I want to see him play. I want to see as many Arkansas guys play on this team as possible. But I'll be honest with you. If there's one player that I feel like they could jump up this draft board into the top nine that's sitting in this drift right now, it's Nick Smith Jr. Because I think he's going to do some crazy things that everybody's going to have to take a step back and watch and recognize. So, again, we're talking about a draft that, you know, really 4 through 20 is the biggest question marks I have ever seen in a draft before. There's 16 picks that it could go – the guy that's ranked 20th right now could go number 4 or 5. And it's insane. I've never seen it like this open like this. Usually it's like cut down. It's like, no, these are going to be the top 8-9 players drafted. You know, you can usually pick 8 or 9 guys in the top 10 guys drafted, and you can usually get most of them correct. Not in the exact spot they get drafted in, but the top 9 players in the draft usually can figure out who they're going to be. This year, though, man, I'm sitting here being like, ooh, it could be this person. Ooh, it could be this person. It could be this person. And I'm sitting there, and the next thing you know is I have – you know, 16 players that could go in the top, you know, these 5 positions out of 6 positions that will be available after 3. Have we ever seen anything like that? I don't think so. Like, and the crazier thing is that we have 2 Arkansas players that, in my opinion, are 2 of the best guards available. You got Black and you've got Smith Jr. Like, these 2 guys are phenomenal. And I'm sitting here just wondering, like, where, like, they could go back to back. They could go, you know, 6-7, they could go, you know, 5-4, I mean, 4-5, who knows? That's what's so great about this year, and that's why it's so hard to really fall in love with the players, because really this is going to be one of those drafts that Sam Presti is going to take what's available to him that's left, because people are going to be greedy as fuckers this year.
They always miss, right? I mean, think about the Timberwolves. They picked Johnny Flynn and Ricky Rubio and left Steph Curry on the board, right?
Yeah.
Doesn't matter. Like, you can have, like, the fail-safe plan. Okay, we're going to make sure that one of these guys is a star, but you miss the superstar. So we'll figure it out, but you're right. So how do we, like, just – I don't know how to do it. Like, how do we break down the draft when there's such a wide range of players that we could be picking from? Like, the last couple of drafts has been kind of obvious to us.
Yeah, it was completely obvious that we had, you know, 3 days or 4 days before the draft, you did your – you did Ben Mathewin as your second favorite guy, and then you did the other guy was J-Dub. You know, you're like, this is that. We had done a Usman Jang episode. We did a Giddy episode. You know, we've always done a very good job at scouting the players, you know, and understanding what Sam Presti's going for. But this year it's different because, I mean, I don't think that Sam Presti is necessarily going to go for a center or a big man, but he could. You know, and if this was the year that he was going to do it, I wouldn't be surprised if this would be the year. He could go keep on going where he's had success. Bro. You know?
I'd be shocked.
Yeah.
I'd be shocked because that's why J-Dub, Chet combo, like, that's the last thing we need. We need.
So, like, then we look at the places on our, you know, how many spots we have open. You know, like, how many guys can we get from this draft? And I have to say, man. Our second rounder, I think that we'll probably end up having 1 second rounder, will probably be a G League player, maybe 2 G League player. I think that there is going to be a first round pick that we're going to talk about, maybe picking up Rayan Rupert, right, for a developmental player like Usman Jang.
Phantom.
And then I wouldn't be surprised if we somehow sneak another first round pick of a player that's ready to produce right now. And is that player Nick Smith Jr.? Is that player Leonard Miller? Is that player Bilal? Is that player? There's so many guys on this draft. It's insane, bro. It's insane. It's why it makes me so excited. Is because, like, we could go with anybody. And when I say we could go with anybody, I mean, that's truly it. Because if you look at 4 through 20, there's only 3 or 4 guys in there that I would be like, you know, Sam Presti's definitely not going to go with that guy. And then maybe another 2 or 3 that just because of their attitudes or issues like that mentality, I could see no. But, I mean, we're talking 16 positions and 5-6 guys that I would say no way. You know, like that's crazy to me because, again, it's just this wide range of what could be.
Yeah, it's the type of draft where you find a Paul George or Kawhi Leonard if you
Giannis.
Know what you're looking for. Right. So we'll see what happens, man. So one thing I keep getting excited about is the fact that over the last couple of drafts, Pressey's been really good with the second round.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's phenomenal.
Even though it's like, oh, we don't have roster spots, we shouldn't be like, we shouldn't stop picking in the second round. And we should find ways to work with players to make it work. So that makes me really think about Jay Will. Have we ever seen a player go from like pure G League minutes to starter minutes by the end of the season so quickly? I don't think so.
Beginning of the season, man, he was getting all those did not play DMPs right. or DNFs or whatever the fuck they're called.
Yeah, yeah. So I think with Jay Will, I'm just kind of like, we got to look for another opportunity for a player to come in and be like, yeah, he's a G League player, but you don't know the circumstance of the season. Opportunities will open up. He can step up into the role, outperform expectations, and then become a really valuable contract that if the player comes back and the other guy can't play, you trade the new guy or you trade the old guy. Like, that's how this team has to continue to be developed. So don't worry about roster spots. That'll be worked out in the summer. The roster is capable of being expanded, and there are some guys that already feel like they're kind of on the outside looking in. Like, I'd hate to see a guy like Poku be on the outside looking in, because like, he was playing so well when he was healthy, and I think he'll get back to that point. But you never know, long enough timeline, it could be every guy.
Yeah, you're right, man. And I think that's the best way of phrasing it and putting it, is that we just got to be patient right now. We got to be patient with recognizing who we have on our bench. We got J-Dub still developing. We have Jay Will still developing. We have Chet still developing. Usman Jang. We have all these guys that are still developing. There's no reason for us to be in a rush to be like, oh, we got to get this player right now. He's got to produce right now. Like, you know, Phantom, you picked up another one of these guys that I've been very keen on and keeping a close eye on, and that's Vucevic. This dude can straight up shoot. He can semi-play what I would call decent defense. And I think that's where the key is right here, is that Sam Presti just doesn't want a player that can score. And as we're looking at these guys developing, he wants a player that can play defense, because he's already had the Enes the Penis Kanter, debacle. He's had the Mitch McGarry debacle. Like, he's had these guys that are good on offense but are such liabilities on defense, you can't play him in the playoffs. Like, he doesn't want to go down that road again. So making sure that, like, a guy that is available that's a great defender is the key at this moment, you know? And I'm excited that Sam Presti has all these ideas of who it's going to be and what player. But, you know, again, for me, I'm sitting down and I have my draft board and all the different scenarios that players could be picked in front of me. And I have, you know, each scenario, the player I'm going to choose from that. And I think Sam Presti is one of those guys. He's very, you know, level-headed, clear thinker, and he knows that he's going to have a choice of one of three players or four players on his draft board that are going to be available. All the rest of them probably won't be available.
But one of those guys that's available at 12 is a guy that he would pick if he had a top five pick.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
And that's who we're going to get. Like, J-Dub, you're telling me he wouldn't take J-Dub at 7?
Oh, he would have.
You know what I mean?
He absolutely would have.
Right. So, like, I've seen a lot of times people are like, Presti, he should have traded back. He could have traded back and got the same guy. But he doesn't do that.
To me, I go back to, you know, Wash, fucking love you, by the way. I go back to when Sam picked up Jang.
Yeah, dude.
You know, and it was everybody was like, oh, he picked up this player, paid three draft picks. And this is a similarity of this. It's like, I feel like the only way to, you know, show you a time in the NBA, recent NBA history of something like this happening was when we made the trade to the Clippers, right? We said the only way we would do this if they threw in what? Shea. Right?
Maybe. I don't remember that conversation.
I mean,
but I'm not saying it didn't happen.
I'm just saying.
I've smoked, like, a lot of weed since then.
let's just say that the deal was on Shea. Okay? So what we learned from that position was is that Doc Rivers was going to do whatever it takes to get two superstars there, period. And he knew that he was going to overpay for that second superstar because it was worth it. The only other time that I've ever seen something like this happen before, and the way that Sam Presti protected it, was how Doc and that, you know, front office protected Kawhi and PG-13 getting there together by one trade. Like, Sam Presti recognized that he had to protect J-Dub. And the only way to do so was make a trade that he's going to lose three first-round draft picks. Well, in the long scheme of things, was it worth to have those three draft picks, or is it worth to have Jang and J-Dub in your system the rest of the, you know, 10, 15, 20 years, whatever they get, playing for the Thunder? Like, it was a cause and effect one. It wasn't like, oh, I'm just picking up Jang, I want Jang too. No, he was protecting his pick. And that's why when I'm saying, like, I feel like Sam could do the same thing here in this draft, I truly mean that. He could go out there and protect his pick, knowing who the other teams are going to pick, and fly in there, get his guy, and sneak out before anybody realizes he was there.
Sneak attack. Orlando, with that 11th pick, watch out. They got 6 and 11. That's what I keep looking at. Well, like, there's no way they want to pick that too.
And then you hear Houston saying that they're upset. They don't want number 4. You know? They don't feel like there's value at 4. So if there is no value at 4 and they don't feel value at 4, they might trade back to 12 and, you know, take an extra first or second round draft pick and include it into that. So who knows? Like, I don't.
Houston's goofy. Houston is like, they're sitting there being like, there's nothing good. It's a big pile of crap at number 4. And it's like, Presti would be like, pure gold. But they're like, it's just crap. Nothing but crap.
That's what I'm saying, man. Dude. Like,
You see Mike Malone put that in the smoke. Yes, put that in the pipe and smoke it.
Dude, he's just talking the Denver language, bro.
He was saying, okay, so after the game, the game one, all the media, the narrative was all around the Lakers and how they had figured something out, and everybody's going to come back and they were going to get him. And then he said, so you take that and you put that in your pipe and you smoke it.
Beautiful.
Dude, and you could tell that they were pissed, but here's the thing. I didn't get to see the game. It was on too late, but I watched the highlights.
Yeah.
10-minute highlight package on YouTube. Thank you. So the Lakers led pretty much the whole game, and then Jamal Murray just goes off in the fourth quarter. I mean, I'm over-summarizing it, but like what I felt like was apparent, dude, was the Nuggets were not going to lay down. And now, with the Lakers, you think they're going to lay down? You still calling that Lakers winning this series?
I only said that because I still believe that AD and LeBron, when they're playing the best basketball they can play, they're the best duo, 1-2 duo left in the playoffs. And I'm not seeing that right now. And I don't know if it's because of Denver's defense. I don't know if it's the way that Denver's playing them, but I just feel like there's something wrong and I can't put a finger on it. And maybe it's just because Lakers have wasted all their other energy, but I'll be honest, the series is not even over because Denver just did what they're supposed to do, win at their home. So now Lakers have an opportunity to win at their home.
A lot of people seem to forget that, right?
What's that?
Like the Lakers, a lot of people seem to forget that because the Lakers had a chance to steal those games. But in the end, all Denver did was what they're supposed to do.
Yeah. No, you're right. No, Phantom, we know that Murray is a top five player in playing right now. There's definitely no denying that. He's just, like, in my opinion, at this point, I just didn't know if him and Joker would be enough to beat LeBron and AD. And obviously, they're proving me wrong in a very explicit way. But
well, they won two games. It's not over yet. It's
going to be a series. Their two wins were pretty much like, fuck you.
They were, but at the same time, they were close games, and they could have gone either way down the stretch. But, you know, the Nuggets, they know what they're doing in the, you know, crunch time, and they got it done. We'll see what happens. But, Camille, to answer your question, no, I haven't seen that letter from Josh.
Oh, it's great, bro.
Yeah?
Oh, yeah. It's great.
Why don't you send it to me? How old is it?
Like, day old. I thought I sent it to you. Right after we got off the podcast, it posted.
Oh, okay. I missed it.
Yeah.
I'll read it.
It's good, dude. It's fucking
everybody really check good. It out.
He's just thanking the fans and explaining like the future and his idea of what it could be like type stuff. It's pretty good.
Really? So I'm looking for it, bro.
You should do it.
I see this Beavis and Butthead spanking video that you sent. I sent you.
Oh yeah, yeah, that's a good one.
That's a really good one, dude. All
right. Well, I don't know who I sent it to then. I might have sent it to some random.
Well, I can't find what you're talking about, so I'm gonna send everybody this Beavis and Butthead little video, and then they can watch it on their own time, if they feel so inclined.
Beavis and Butthead is always a classic, man. Always a fucking classic.
You guys asked for the Josh Giddey letter, and we give you this.
Boom, boom.
Not the same thing.
Man, I laugh pretty hard at Beavis and Butthead. Like, I'm a big fan of South Park, but dude, the first time I watched Beavis and Butthead that I really connected was when Beavis was very upset because this guy was complaining about dating a sex addict. He's just like, he's like, you just want to bang all the time, and it's just crazy. And Beavis is like, what? You're mad about that?
You score too much?
You score too much? What's wrong with you?
love that shit, dude. So shit. Now we got Celtics, Heat, game two. Staying up for it, bro.
Yeah.
Call it now. You think the Heat end this thing in Boston? Like, if you steal the first two games, the series is over, right?
Except I mean, Boston's come back from two game deficits before. So
I know, but to lose the first two at home, I don't know that's ever happened. And the other teams come back to win. I don't know for sure. I know, like, 3-0 hasn't ever happened, I don't think. So 2-0.
I thought there was a 3-0.
Who did the 3-0? I know 3-1 was pretty much like...
Was it Denver?
Unheard of. 3-0? I don't think so, dude.
I don't know.
But so that's what I'm looking at. I'm thinking if Boston loses here, their season's over.
You could be right, man. I could be wrong on that. But I still think that Boston could go down 2-0 and be okay. But going back and playing...
They'd have to steal the next two. You couldn't go down 3-1 and still be okay, could you?
No. Well, I mean, I say no, but I mean, the Thunder got beat 3-1 after holding a...
Yeah, but it's a little different because, I don't know. It would be crazy, but it would be something like that.
Yeah.
So they don't need to put themselves in that problem. So what are they going to do? They're going to come out and ball, or do you think the Heat will come in and put their mark on the game?
I mean, I think Heat's going to put their mark on the game for sure, bro. I really do. I think Heat's going to put their mark on the game, but when Tatum and Brown are on, there's nobody that can stop them. So that's what it comes down to. Is like in the same scenario that we're talking about with the Lakers is going to happen here with the, you know, Celtics. If they can figure out how to use their 1-2 combo the most effectively, then they'll win. But if they can't do that, then Miami's going to tear them apart because they're playing like a fucking full team that's, you know, on a mission. And anybody that's playing like a full team right now on a mission is better than a team that's struggling to figure out which way is up.
Well, if you were Joe Mazzulla, how much would you tell Jason Tatum you loved him going into this game?
I mean... I don't know if love is what he needs. He might need a little School of Hard Knocks. Get your ass out of your head.
I don't think they do that in Boston anymore.
Well, where's Brad Stevens when you need him?
Brad Danny Stevens. Ainge, come back. You think he'd fix this problem? I don't know, man.
Dude. I just think that it's hard to say anything until
it's 1-1.
It's hard to say anything until we're at game 5 or game 6.
Yeah, it is.
On any series.
It's probably going to be tied 1-1. If the Heat stole game 2, then it would be really one of the biggest, like,
it's already one of the biggest upsets in NBA history at this point. With as far as they've gone.
It's a hell of a run. It's a hell of a run at this point, for sure. Getting to the finals would be historic.
That's what I'm for, man. I love this underdog idea of these guys that can go out there and just put some crazy numbers up that had no chance of it. And Spoltz just said the other day was the best thing that's happened to the NBA in the last, what, 20 years is the play-in games.
Really?
Yeah, dude. Like, everybody's on board now. Like, that's exactly what we needed, because, like, that is the type of energy that needs to happen, because teams need to be wanting to get to the playoffs. Every single year, the way into the playoffs should be this crazy as it was this year. It shouldn't be a given for anybody. It should be five games separating the 4 seed and the 10 seed. You know, like, that's insanity. And that's what I love, because now you're sitting at a situation where you have the 7 seed in the Western Conference Finals and the 8 seed in the Eastern Conference Finals. Well, why is that? Well, it's because they all recognize that they could do this a different way. They had an opportunity to do this. And it's the wild card in the MLB or any other, you know, organization and professional sports that have decided to open it up like this. Like, it's over, man. Like, these teams are sitting here saying, we had never had a chance to win even at the 8th seed. Now all of a sudden say, hey, wait a second here. We could do this, you know?
Dude, I saw somebody say that Budenheiser, Nurse, and Doc Rivers over the last 3 years have won more games than any other three coaches. Now, I could be misquoting, but yeah, the Bucks, the Sixers, and the Raptors, winning percentage has been so far up there, and all three of them are looking for new jobs now. And I think that says something.
It's the revolution, bro. It's what we've been talking about. The new NBA is now more valuable than the old.
So let's talk about somebody who's kind of from the old NBA that is being able to do it because of one thing that's being mentioned in the chat right now, which we appreciate, which is innovation. But that's what's going on with Miami right now. And there is some similarities, like Camille is saying, between Coach D and the way that Eric Spoelstra approaches the game and coaches the game and brings out the best in role players and gets the offense to be less dependent on isolation basketball. Yeah. I'm a huge fan of these parallels being driven because I see them too. You know what I
mean? Yeah, I hear you.
So what do you think about it?
Well, I call it the revolution of the NBA. I knew it was going to happen this year and next year, where all the old coaches are starting to look, you know, people are like, oh, well, you know, we see this every 10, 15 years, a new systems that's more powerful or a better idea of what systems, the developmental stage is more popular. So we've seen this stuff happen before. But, bro, not like this. I mean, this is next level. This is next level because there's so many old coaches looking for jobs. And if you look at who they're looking to replace them with, it's not seasoned coaches, bro. It's assistant coaches to other teams that have never been head coaches before. I've never seen this before. Never.
Yeah.
Like, even the teams that are competing right now, you've got what? You've got Devin Ham. What is he? A rookie coach, right? We've got Mark Malone. Again, new school, you know, not rookie coach, but new school coach. You've got, on the other side, you've got Mazzulla, obviously, brand fucking new baby coach. And then you've got Eric Spoelstra, who's probably the oldest running coach, longest tenure running coach in the league. You know, like, this is what's happening.
Popovich is still there until he's gone.
Yeah, until he's gone. Well, I think I hope Popovich stays one more year, just for fuck's sake. He deserves to have a number one player playing with him again. But that's what we're looking at now. You know, like, we're seeing this revolution of the NBA. And to me, I'm sitting here and I'm excited about it, because if you're seeing the coaches change like this and you're seeing the GMs change like they are, then you know the players and the staff and everything else is changing. And that's what's exciting.
Hey, Vax, what's up, guy?
Oklahoma City is already on course. They're already ahead of the game. Everybody else is trying to play catch up now.
All right, so AVAX, Thunder 6 seed, minimum 2024 playoffs. Boom. Called it. Mark that down, everybody. I dig it. And look, I know we have Spurs fans who listen to this, and I shouldn't be like, yo, let's trash the Spurs real quick. But deep down, my secret dark fantasy about Victor and Wembanyama and the Spurs is this, guys. it ends up like Luka. He's too good for the team, and he ends up starting to look for greener pastures.
Popovich won't let that happen.
Cities.
You know why?
But, dude, it happened with Kawhi. Yeah,
but check this out. I want to be honest with you. Is that, like, he recognizes that slow goes the train. And the reason is because you have to look at Oklahoma City as the successful way. You have to have one more, you have to have one more pick that's a top seven pick to round off this team, and you'll be okay.
Look, I want what's best for the league, and I think Victor being in San Antonio is best for him too. But in the end, if they trip over themselves in this rebuild, that's why I think Pop should not stick around for 1 year. It's not good for Victor to get a new coach in the middle, I don't think. I think Pop should be kind of like front office, there, available, consultant for the coach, to a resource for him to pick his mind, be a part of. But like, they need to move in the new direction. And I get Victor probably would even want Pop.
After
Popovich, but you have to be like,
after Popovich's wife died, he doesn't, you know, like, he needs to stay focused on the game. You know, yes, he's got grandkids and all that other stuff, but like, to me,
changing coaches in the middle can disrupt a player's career.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's like seen as a good thing, but I could see Pop sticking around for 3 or 4 years, and then that could be like, I don't know, like, here's the thing. Pop was not actually what I would say like a good player's coach. Like, he had this approach with players, which was, I will yell at the best players so I can yell at the worst players. How will that work in the modern NBA? Like, it's a good standard to have in the 90s and the early 2000s, but that was even seen as like innovative, because it was like, he's yelling at his stars. Like, nobody yells at the stars, they only yell at the other guys. Yeah. And then Pop's doing it, he's yelling at everybody. Equal opportunity getting yelled at. He would just rip into Tony Parker. Like, he would just tear Tim Duncan apart sometimes. And it was just like, so as an example, I just don't see that type of heavy-handed coaching. But I do think he could be a lot like the type of resource that Sam Presti is for Mark Daigneault.
Yeah.
I've heard Mark Daigneault say they talk all the time about practice, about lineups, about everything. So I'm like, that could be a really interesting thing. But they,
you think it would be like a president role, like a vice president role or something like that, that he would take up?
Yeah, man, he should hang out like above. Like, they usually
Look at Popovich as the control guy, though. You know, like, do you think he's going to want to give up control of the first? Like, think about this. He's had the ability to coach two of the greatest big men in the history of the game. Not the greatest big men ever, but two of the greatest big men in the game. Both of them are in the top 50-50 and 75 at 75. Now, do you think his pride is going to be like, I've got to coach Wemby? Because if he turns into that player, then I have 1, 2, 3 of the greatest. Like, to me, if I was a coach, that's what I would be looking at right now. That's what I would be saying. Ah, I want to coach one more year just so I can say it. Fucking, I know, legacy, like, bro.
All right, fair enough. Right. But then again, like, if you end up in a spot where you're like the Mavericks and you're still reorganizing around Luka in the middle of his like prime, assumed, you know what I mean? Like, then all of a sudden everywhere else looks better.
Well, like, but we're still got 5 years until Wemby or Victor is at that age.
I know, but if you get to the point where you're an MVP candidate, as soon as you're at that point, you're no longer like, well, I'm only 21. I'm only 22.
Like,
you're like, dude, these bums better start catching up.
If Victor played for us, like, I would only want him playing 15 minutes a game first year. I mean, seriously, guys. Like,
I would like 22. I mean,
but starting off, games, man, there's no reason why to ever run a player of his size out for 30, 40 minutes a game ever at this point of his career. Maybe when he gets older and gets more used to the NBA. But maybe that's just the way I look at it, is player development, is that develop the players without destroying your chances of winning.
I hope, and I mean this sincerely, like, I hope he's too good. I don't hope he's injured. I don't hope he's bad. I just hope his like career like goes so fast that it leaves the Spurs grasping to try to figure out how to build a contender around him.
I can respect that.
But I don't want him to get hurt. I want him to be a long, I want the Chet versus Victor rivalry to be something that we're still talking about. It didn't pan out great, but like KD versus LeBron, yeah. Or I guess, you know, we saw LeBron and Steph that was a hell of a series. Like, that would be great. You know, 15 years, people are still talking about this matchup.
Mm. I love it, dude. I think the fact that we get to watch him play for a great organization, and to me, when we asked me about where I wanted Victor to go, I was consistently saying I just didn't want him to go to a place that he was going to end up being become trash later on. And if he has the best chance of surviving, right, it was with the teams in the West. You know, like, I looked at Portland as being a bad place for him. I looked at Hornets for being a bad place for him. And I kept on being like, I definitely don't want him to see him go to Detroit or Houston because, I mean, that's going to suck. But, I mean, San Antonio made sense, man. And, like, the Thunder made sense. And, you know, I look at the Pacers. Like, they made sense. They'll develop players like that. So, like, that's what he needed to be the best player that he could possibly be. And now that he's got that, I'm excited for him. I'm excited that he gets to actually have an opportunity to be that player-defining player everybody said he was going to be.
You got to watch this video. It's a YouTube short where Victor is, like he's standing still, but he's just moving his toes, and he's, like, walking across the floor with just his toes.
Whoa.
It's really funny, dude. It's an exercise, I guess he does.
Crazy, man.
I've never seen anything like it.
Does he have, like, little feet on each of his toes, essentially? That's crazy.
Bro, you're asking me. I'm going to pull it up because I've got it right here, dude. I shouldn't, like, admit the things that I watch with my spare time, but yes.
Wash. All right. I hear Detroit. I just didn't want to see him to go to Detroit. I looked at the San Antonio better place than Detroit, but we agreed on two of the three. That's good to know.
I'm going to find it, bro. Detroit would be terrible.
Yeah, dude. Houston and Detroit, I would hate to see him go there because they're all set to start winning once he would pop in there. And Orlando, another place I would hate to see him go. Hated to see him go.
Dude, what the hell? I guess maybe I didn't see it. There it is, bro. You ready for this? I can't see what you're looking at, so here you go.
Oh, my God. Is he jumping?
I guess he's doing a little hops.
Yeah, he's doing hops.
But look at it at the beginning. Then he starts doing hops.
Damn, dude.
All right, one more time.
Dang. That's insane. Look at those toes move, man.
Magic. I think I'm going to try that and see if it's even possible.
Magic toes, bro.
This is AI simulated. He's not actually a real person. And the Spurs are drafting an NFT.
Dude. You could see those little feet attached to them. You know how, like, you put those little finger feet on your hands, you know? Have you seen those
before? Or, like, in an old cartoon, yeah. If, like, ants got up underneath him and started, like,
dragged him across the floor.
Right.
Oh, my gosh.
Dude, and he didn't realize he was moving?
Yeah.
Yeah, dude.
So, fuck, dude. Yeah.
All right. So, you're busy tomorrow. We're busy Sunday. We got plans. We're going to hang out.
Well, tomorrow, I'm free in the morning. So if you want.
Free in the morning? Yeah. You guys free in the morning?
Hell yeah.
I hope you are.
Hell yeah, they're free.
That'd be dope. If you guys can join us, we would love that. We're not sure when. I'm on vacation. I'm going to head out to the boardwalk, to the beach, nice, go dude. See some dope-ass Corvettes. It's incredible how many cars are here.
Nice, dude.
Like, I've seen.
It's Hot Rod, right?
At least, yeah, I've seen at least 200 Corvettes that are pre-1980s.
Nice,
like,
dude.
They're all, like, 60s, 70s.
Damn.
Incredible amount of. Like Camaros.
And our little brother used to own a 1970 Corvette, right? 69, 70.
Yeah, it was like right in there. Years,
it had the double fin. Oh, man, it's so beautiful. It was white.
Yeah.
Tan interior.
I think it was a Stingray. I'm not sure. What's up, Tanner? Thanks for joining us. All right, so we'll be back. We appreciate you guys, and we'll see you tomorrow.
Hell yeah, guys. Appreciate it. Stay safe.